Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the one, the only, the magnificent, Drea Kaufman.
The exhausted Drea Kaufman. Hello! Just added that in there for you.
Well, hello!
Hello!
Just do your weirdest voice, so... Anyway, no, I'm excited. What's fun about this chapter is that, like, you know, we start to kick off some action, and so some things are really building towards happening. So I'm so excited to be at chapter 12 here. The magic is might. Before we get there, of course, quick reminder, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, give us a star rating review, help people find the show. Of course, we're also on places like Spotify and all the other podcatchers that you can find out there. So you can also find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. TheNerdParty.com is a great place to check out all the different podcasts that we've got on the network. And if you go to the contact section, you can send Drea and I an email and we'll be able to converse with you that way. And maybe you'll hear your thoughts on the show. So, but Drea, this is a really interesting chapter because a lot of time actually passes. We're in August and we get this feeling from reading the chapter that the kids have been spending their days scouting out the Ministry of Magic to try and figure out a way to get to Dolores Umbridge. And as they're doing this, the place is also being watched by some shady characters who are trying to figure out, you know, how they're getting in and out of Grimmauld Place. And so, and I get the feeling, like, honestly, you know, because the wedding's right after Harry's birthday. So we spend an entire month of them doing this. I mean, a lot of time passes here.
Depending on how you define a lot, but it's not just an overnight or a day thing. Yeah, we're skipping over a lot of the day-to-day in this chapter, and a lot of the day-to-day has evolved, right? Throughout the chapter, we find that everything seems to be kind of cleanly, and they have, you know, non-moldy bread again for food, and creatures doing laundry and cooking dinner, and, you know, Harry comments that his food is getting increasingly better as it goes on. So there's definitely an evolution of this is becoming sort of a life for them and not just a way point or a pit stop, they're getting a little more comfortable, and we find they've really been using this time to do a lot of recon work on the Ministry of Magic.
And it's really interesting because you can really tell that they have been putting all the work in. And the beginning of the chapter, you know, it begins with Harry getting back from a mission where he spent the entire day, like 8 hours, you know, watching people come and go from the ministry. And I think one of my favorite things is, you know, when he gets home, Creature is as happy as can be. He's in like a freshly laundered towel, you know, very clean. He's very happy to see, you know, Master Harry. In fact, he's like, you know, please take off your shoes and wash your hands before dinner, which is just like they've turned this place into like a little home, you know. And so it's at least a comfortable life for them right now. I mean, you know, with Creature cooking, it's way better than any of them doing it, obviously. And apparently he's making great food. I mean, his onion soup they have tonight is the best that Harry's ever had.
I mean, it's a whole... We made a different Disney reference before we started recording. This is a whole new world for them. And you know, it's they're finding a new normal, which is something I think everyone can relate to, right? They're sneaking around in the invisibility cloak. You know, they're getting too tall for it. And that gets mentioned a couple times that Ron is always a little bit too tall for the cape whenever, or the cloak whenever he lands on the step. And you know, they haven't been able to make contact with anybody since Lupin left, and prior to that, obviously. And, you know, they're able to acknowledge that they catch little glimpses of Mr. Weasley outside the Ministry of Magic, and it gives them kind of a peace of mind that he's okay because they see him. And even if he looks worried, at least he's still alive and able to walk and going to work and things like that. And so, you know, we get kind of caught up and up to speed about where they're at in their life. I do love that we have a little moment of Hermione sort of being neurotic here too, mm-hmm. Where Ron mentions something about navy robes equating to the magical department of maintenance, mm-hmm. or something like that. And she's like, you've never mentioned that before. And she like consults a big stack of notes and is like, see, there's nothing in here about navy robes. There's nothing in here, Ron. There's nothing. And it's nice to see her back in that sort of like obsessive compulsive state too, because it's just so her and who she is and what she brings to the table. And so, you know, we're just sort of getting an idea that everything is kind of as it should be right now. And then Harry sort of drops a bombshell on them.
Yeah. I mean, because he brings home the Daily Prophet. And there is some very big news in there. He does mention that he saw Ron's dad, and Ron always appreciates, obviously, getting this news, which is fantastic. And so, but the beginning, the front of the Daily Prophet has a huge headline of that Severus Snape has been confirmed as the Hogwarts headmaster now. And not only that, but you've got people like Alecto Caro as Muggle Studies professor, his brother filling in as the Defense Against the Dark Arts professor, and these are just Death Eaters, you know? And, you know, Harry even mentions too, there are many of them the same ones that were there, you know, the night that Dumbledore died. And, you know, really the only thing that, and they're talking about the fact that the other teachers, they may never, you know, how could they accept this? And Harry's like, I'm sure they have to. I mean, and their goal would be to protect the kids that are there, you know, as much as they can. So, it's really just an awful thing that's happened. And it really is showing, like, this whole chapter, especially by the time we get to the end, is going to show just how bad of a state the wizarding world is in Britain, with Voldemort as the head behind all of this stuff. I also like, too, you mentioned Hermione getting a little neurotic, and the fact that she runs off from the table and comes back carrying this massive portrait of Phineas Nigellus. And I just love that she shoves it into her beaded bag, and she's like, I mean, if Snape's the headmaster, we don't want him going between pictures and Snape being able to hear what we're up to. Which, like, she's so smart. Like, just the fact that she thinks of these things.
Right, because his portrait's there, because he is from the Black family,
yep.
I'm pretty sure. And so, yeah, you know, I love the moment, and that becomes really important in the future, too, that little move that she does there. And yeah, they talk about, you know, the teachers really have no choice, and, you know, it's either that or Azkaban or worse. And, you know, they kind of try to readjust the conversation. And then Harry shares with them that whatever the plan they've been hatching is he wants to do it tomorrow. And they're both kind of taken aback by that timeline. And essentially he's like, what are we waiting for? There's nothing we're waiting for. You know, we can wait here forever and there's never going to be this perfect moment. And I think that's such a wise thing to say too. We all kind of wait for perfect moments and, oh, the time will be right. And, you know, he's just like, you know what? We're just going to go for it. We've prepped all we can prep. We're not going to get any better. Let's just do it.
Yeah. And I think that is something that's actually really smart. And this is like, you know, they've been doing this for a month now. And I think Harry's right. You know, you got to act. Right. And you they have to start somewhere, because and I think he's actually kind of, I don't know if you want to say blessed, but the fact that he brings home that paper and that has happened, right, is something I think help pushes both Ron and Hermione to be able to say, okay, we've got to do something. We can't just keep planning forever, or else nothing will change, you know? And so
they essentially do a risk assessment,
right?
They need to act, because not acting, so acting is risky, but not acting actually has more risk associated with it, right? They're able to sit down and have sort of a mature conversation about this, more so than a lot of adults can. I know a lot of people at work who can't have that conversation, no offense. But I mean, there's just, it's so mature of them to sit down. And like you said, so smart of Harry to be the one to instigate it and pull the trigger and really push it and say, guys, it's now. Like, the longer, we're not going to get any more information for the exchange of how much our colleagues and peers and friends and family are going to suffer.
Right.
So, you know, they kind of hesitantly agree to go along. And, you know, then we start to enact this crazy harebrained scheme they've been working on. And it's interesting because part of that 30 days, we come to find there was a reason for that. Because as we know, Polyjuice Potion takes, what does it take, like 27 or 28 days anyway? It takes a fortnight, which is a month, which is like 27 days, I think. Something to that extent. If I remember from what, like book two? Book two? Anyone who wants to tell me the 12 ingredients in Polyjuice Potion? I'm just kidding. So, I mean, there's also a reason why they had to wait the amount of time they did. But, you know, now it's like, why are we waiting? It's done. We've got all our intelligence. Let's boogie.
Well, and it's really interesting, too, because then you get into this whole argument about, like, Ron being like, oh, Hermione, I think you should stay here. And I love how they kind of start going back and forth. And Harry's like, you know what? I'll stay here. You guys take on Voldemort. And they all just kind of laugh. And so he breaks up that tension. So you can kind of tell that Harry is kind of learning some ways to kind of break up the tension between those two when it starts in. But that's the point when his scar starts to hurt and he excuses himself to the bathroom to be able to experience what's going on with Voldemort. And we find out that Voldemort is looking for Gregorovitch, of course, the wand maker, we found out about a couple of chapters ago. And
which feels like forever ago.
At this point. I know.
It feels like forever.
And Hermione, the next thing, you know, Harry knows Hermione is banging on the bathroom door because he's been yelling. And it's because he just watched Voldemort kill a whole family. And they start talking about this idea that he's looking for Gregorovitch. And Hermione's all mad at Harry because he's not learning occlumency. And I think that, you know, it's just another one of those places where Hermione cannot understand exactly what Harry is going through. And in fact, she even slips up, I would say, very badly when she's like, oh, you like having this special connection with him. And he's like it? And you can just hear the tone of voice too, like, oh, I like it, do I? Mm-hmm. I like watching him murder people, you know, like, and of course she has to backpedal and he's like, look, you've got to forget Dumbledore. I'm making this choice because I want to know what he's up to and who he's after and why he thinks things are important. And it's partly because Harry believes, obviously, that this weird thing happened with his wand, and they don't. And he also believes that Voldemort believes that exact same thing. So there's that other conflict of, they don't truly believe that what happened to Harry and Voldemort happened the way Harry said it did, but he believes that Voldemort believes what he believes, if any of that makes sense.
Yes, no, I totally follow what you're saying, and it does make sense because, I don't know, it gives him different context than it gives them.
Right.
Right? Like, it's terrible and horrible and it's good that they know, but they're going to take something different away from that than he's going to take. And he's going to have a slightly better understanding of why that happened than they're going to have. And I think that that really gives him that advantage in the situation, but he doesn't quite know what to do with it yet. And he, you know, he just, like with everything else that this has happened, he gets frustrated that they don't understand it. And I think that's totally relatable. I mean, I get frustrated when other people don't understand where I'm coming from, right? And I can't even imagine if it was something as big and impactful as somebody killing a bunch of people and not being able to understand the reasoning, right? And I had to watch it. Like, there's so much there, you know, it's always hard when you're feeling like people don't understand. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at on something. Well, and I think he's just tired of it too. He's just tired. He's over.
Yeah, no. And what's really interesting too is that I was just thinking about this as you're talking, because like, why don't they understand? If Voldemort is actively seeking out wand makers, we already know he has Ollivander, and mm-hmm. he's looking for this other wand maker. Obviously, he has something in his mind about wands as much as what Harry does. So it's like, even the evidence points to Harry being correct. You know, and this is so the thing that's so interesting to me about this series is so many times, like, Harry has a very good reason for thinking something, and there have been many times in the series too where Harry's been proven to be wrong or not had all the facts until the very end, right? But this does seem to point to that Harry has a real understanding here of what Voldemort's after, why he's after it, because they both experience something that they can't explain, and now Voldemort's on the warpath to try and figure out why he can't kill this boy.
Right. And yeah, Harry has excellent logical deduction skills. He can take lots of pieces and put them together. But again, that's a skill that not mm-hmm. everybody has. And so it seems so easy and simple and straightforward. And when we're reading it in a book and it's totally splayed out and we know the factual nature behind it, we totally can do it too. But that's a big ask for people who don't have that skill and can't sort of see through the strategic nature of what he's envisioning right. and why he's envisioning that, right? There's some people that can only react to what's in the moment. And so it's just another one of those situations. And it's a really unique talent mm-hmm. that Harry has. And, you know, but I think at this point they're all getting exhausted and run down, and he's just kind of over the fact that nobody believes him for 7 books now, right? Nobody believes him. So, you know, it's a lot. And I think he's mostly frustrated with Hermione because Ron tends to sort of just go with it and Hermione can't mm-hmm. just kind of go with the flow. But yeah, it's just another time that they kind of clash, and she kind of snaps at him more than she probably should have. But you know, we also have all done that, right? Said something we didn't really mean in the moment. And so I love how these characters, every kind of turn and twist and bump, we get the very human side of them, whether they're wizards or not. Mm-hmm. We get the very muggle human part of them. And all of their reactions and approaches seem very relatable and real.
Yeah.
And this is no exception.
Well, and it's, you know, it is great that they have Creature cooking for them, because he also makes them breakfast the next day as they're, looking to go. And as they're walking out the door, too, they've stayed up very late. So luckily, breakfast is excellent. Creature tells them that he'll have steak and kidney pie waiting for them when we return. And Ron's like, bless him. And you know, I used to fantasize about cutting off his head and sticking it on a wall. And so it's kind of great to see, I think Ron be able to have a whole different perspective, you know? And part of that is, you know, when you treat people well, they want to treat you well. You know, as long as they're, a good person. And like, you can tell here, like, Creature is somebody who has been waiting for somebody to treat him well. And so, I also like when they get to the ministry and they're having to hide so that they can wait for these people to approach where they're supposed to enter. They need these special coins, these tokens that allow them to enter as well. And so that's one of the reasons they have to turn into other people and can't just like find other ways to disguise themselves. And so I love that Hermione is going to be Mathilda Hopkirk, who, if you remember, is the one who expelled Harry in the second book for misuse of magic. That wasn't even his magic. It was Dobby's. So I thought that was just really funny that that's who she's going to be.
Well, and in the movies, they don't draw that connection at all. I think we don't even know who the, I don't know that we make that connection in the book or in the movies. But yeah, it's one of the rich parts of the book that, you know, we get this and it's like a secretary and we don't really know much more about what she does. We just know that she's one of the few that doesn't enter the ministry by flu, but goes in sort of the blue collar way that a lot of the other witches and wizards do, right? And so she makes an ideal target for their plan.
And it's so interesting too. What I love is that, you know, they stun her and then with the others, they use the Weasley twins candies to incapacitate them.
Incapacitate.
It's
like
so
that.
Great. Like, I think one of the things that's so smart about it is that and this is Ron. He says, you know, isn't it better not to have a pile of unconscious bodies to draw more attention? So they only have the one with Hobkirk, and then the other two they've either sent to St. Madungo's or elsewhere because they are quote unquote now sick, you know? So like, it's just really smart. And I think, you know, it's one of those places where the book kind of accentuates that Ron is a smart person too. And, you know, so really, really like that. And I also think, just as the movie, they have to flush themselves in. Like, that is just so demeaning, you know, like, it's really kind of disgusting. Then they get to the ministry and like, the entire look and feel of the ministry has really changed.
Well, and I think it's one of those things where we talk about a lot of the areas of the ministry in the wizarding world representing a lot of real life, like class and racism and things like that. And I think the fact that most of the people entering through this flushing system are, you know, like the blue collar workers, the low to middle management, like there's definitely a privilege to not having to flush yourself into work every day, right? And I think it's just another way, even before we actually get into the ministry, that's highlighted as a part of this culture that is created, right? We'll see even more of that when we get in and start interacting with people and seeing what has dramatically changed at the ministry. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it's essentially a way of designating them as not as prestigious of workers as those who can use the flu network and have the ability to flu in and out of their homes. Which is what we've been sort of led to indicate that Umbridge does, which is why we have not seen her during our recon work, but we know she's there. So, you know, and the description of Harry's character gets me because it's so anti-Harry, right? It's this big, bulky, beefy guy who everyone seems to be very afraid of, right? And, you know, Ron is sort of a meek character. And obviously, we've talked a little bit about who Hermione becomes. But yeah, I mean, basically, they infiltrate the ministry and we're greeted with a very unpleasant sort of tone setting statue in the main area of the wizard.
Yeah.
Like the ministry.
It is really a disturbing statue, which is made out of black stone. And you have these a witch and a wizard that are sitting on these ornately carved thrones that are made out of muggles. There are hundreds and hundreds of naked bodies of men, women, and children looking. She describes it so perfectly and just disturbingly of like ugly, stupid, twisted faces, you know, like supporting the handsomely robed wizards. And what I really appreciate is that the mental image that she creates here is so affecting of the fact that this is how Voldemort truly views, like, we are completely othering muggles. We are turning them into something that is basically akin to cattle, right? Like, something that you would, you know, a beast of burden, you know, that you would ride on the backs of them. And it's just absolutely disturbing. And fortunately for them, they don't get a lot of time to like think on this because Yaxley comes by and starts calling Ron's name, who is now not Ron, in disguise.
But Cattermole, which is an awesome name, by the
way. Hilarious. He is supposed to go up to Yaxley's office because apparently it's been raining in his office and it's still raining in his office. And of course, that's not good. And Yaxley starts giving him a complete grief about it too, because he's like, I'm about to go downstairs and interrogate your wife on whether or not she's really a wizard or not. So I would think you want to make me happy. Do you understand what I'm saying?
It's such a slimy, just, I don't even, oh, what's the word? This is just such a corrupt and shady and horrible introduction to the ministry we've gotten. Like, he is literally using his wife and his well-being to get it to stop raining in his office. Like, he's literally threatening his entire family with zero recourse. Like, it is the worst. He is literally the anthem of John Ralphio.
The worst.
He's the worst. He's the worst. So, I mean, it's just so, and it's so blatant. And I think that's the part that nobody, like, that's the big change. Because I'm sure some of these things happen very quietly under the table in any company, government, school, family, whatever have you, right? Any institution is highly susceptible to this kind of behavior. But it's the blatantness with which this is done and the lack of any sort of shame or guilt over it is just straight up appalling, and you just hate him.
Yeah,
just really want to deck him across the face the whole time he's talking. And it's been a while since we've wanted to punch somebody that hard. I think Draco, we wanted to punch Draco that hard a while ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, talk about man alive. And I do love in the movie, I'll give the movie some credit here, I do love that Ron truly becomes Cattermole in the movie and slips up about my wife. And in this one, he kind of catches himself, where in the movie he sort of truly embodies who he's become. And it becomes this like very method actor like approach, which I found hysterical. And then this he still sort of has a little bit of awareness, but he talks about, oh, I need to protect my wife. I mean, Cattermole's wife. But he's like, I don't know how to stop it from raining. And I think, is it, I can't recall now if it's Hermione or Harry who kind of gives him a tip on how to, what to
try. Hermione's giving him all these tips. Like, she's talking about different spells he could use, you know, and she even kind of wants to go with him. But, you know, they realize that's not the best idea. And Harry and Hermione's actually about to go with him and is not able to. Then you have some other people enter the lift, and they're like, you know, trying to talk to Harry, and oh, thanks so much for getting rid of Dirk Cresswell. You know, now I'm hopefully going to be able to get his job. So you just like this place has just turned into ugh. And
well, and then that goes back to when we were talking earlier about this character or this person who Harry is masquerading as is sort of the physical opposite. We're also coming to find out he is like the complete opposite personality wise of Harry too, right? Harry would never dream of doing any of these things. And it turns out that this is a very, this is a character a lot of people fear or celebrate, depending on which side of the, side of the fence you're sitting on.
You know, you get the feeling like this dude's a bruiser, you know, who does not like people other than
it's a great way
those
to put
who
it.
Can do something for him. So
he's a real real jagweed.
We end the chapter with them getting to level one and the doors opening, and who is there but none other than Umbridge herself, toad-like, and a clipboard at her chest, and that's how the chapter ends. So,
oh, Mrs. Toad,
she's
Mrs.
back.
Toad,
she's back.
I know, I hate her.
Yeah, So next chapter is going to be very eventful. There's going to be a ton of things that happen. So I'm very excited to get to that. But before we get to that chapter, Drea, where can everybody find you if they want to catch up with you and see how you are doing?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name @Rushing02. You can also follow me and the 602 Club over at the 602 Club on Twitter. You can find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, the Star Wars podcast, and every week we are talking about a new topic, just something we've been thinking about in Star Wars. It's a lot of fun. You can find me on the Trek FM network. I'm doing three shows there. The Orb with Chris Jones, Literary Treks with Chris Jones. The Orb is about Deep Space Nine. Literary Treks is about the books and comics of Star Trek. And then, of course, doing the 602 Club. Like I mentioned, you can follow us there on Twitter for the 602 Club. And we're talking about all of the fandoms we love. We're really excited. In fact, as of the week this episode comes out, we'll be talking about Tenet. So super excited about that. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.